This recording is a production of Faith Builders. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2013, held at Faith Builders on August 6th through 9.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you. From good to great. This morning we're going to vote, first of all, as to where you peg your school that you're planning to teach this year. I know this is not a fair vote, but I want your general impression of your school. And I'll put the results on the board up here. So I would really like if you could close your eyes while we take this vote. Let me tell you what you're going to vote between. It's not on your handout here, so don't worry about your handout at this point. You're going to vote as to whether your school is going to be a public school where secularism and atheism are part of the program. Or number two, you're going to vote whether you consider your school a poor Christian school, poorly run, financial struggles, weak academics, weak character development, students not well prepared for life when finished. Or number three, it's a fair Christian school, kind of in between, partly weak and partly strong. And number four, a good Christian school, well run by competent board members, well financed, good academics, good character and spiritual development, and the students well prepared for life. Okay? All right? And then if anybody doesn't vote, you have to vote on one of those. If you can't vote on any one of those, if you really feel like you have to have a vote for a great school, I'll give you an option on that one too. Okay, is that all clear? That's not clear for you, is it? Okay, well, if you listen closely when I read these, you'll understand. Just throw your hand up. You have to vote on this, okay? So close your eyes. Okay, so how many of you plan to be teaching in a public school where there's secularism and atheism? Okay, how many of you feel like the school that you're going to be teaching is a poor Christian school, poorly run, with financial struggles, weak academics, weak character development, students not well prepared for life when they're finished? Throw your hand up. Okay, let's keep our eyes closed. This is kind of confidential stuff. Okay. How many of you feel like you're going to be teaching in a fair Christian school, kind of partly weak and partly strong? That's just your evaluation. Okay. How many of you feel like you'll be teaching at a good Christian school that's well run by competent board members, well financed, good academics, good character and spiritual development, and the students are well prepared for life? Okay, now is there anybody who hasn't voted yet and feels like you're going to be teaching in a really great school? Okay, open your eyes. Okay. Okay. All right, this is, we'll say your school. Now, we're going to vote again. This time, we want to think about your old school, where you went to school, your schooling. When you were a little boy and girl, that's what I want you to judge this time. Close your eyes. How many of you attended a public school with that secularism and atheism? Okay. Number two, how many of you attended a poor Christian school, poorly run, with financial struggles, weak academics, weak character development, students not well prepared for life when they're finished? Okay, how many of you feel like you went to a fair Christian school, in between, partly weak and partly strong? Sorry, I lost count. Keep your hands up. Okay. How many of you feel like you attended a good Christian school, well run by competent board members, well financed, good academics, good character and spiritual development, students well prepared for life? Raise your hands. Okay. How many of you feel like you really attended a great school when you were in school? Okay, open your eyes. Isn't that neat? Isn't that interesting? One of the things that I find fascinating is that some of you are here and you had a bad school experience in your old school, and the school that you're going into is that way, and you're still teachers. Evidently, you want to do something about this. This is good. But it looks like most of us were in between someplace. Okay, so this is why this class exists. Okay? When I had this topic, you know, you start doing some research and preparation, and I got a hold of this book. It says Good to Great in God's Eyes. How many of you have ever heard of this book or read it? By Chip Ingram. Okay, well, I read this book. It says 10 practices great Christians have in common. And his topics in here are, I'll just read what it says here. Think great thoughts, read great books, pursue great people, dream great dreams, pray great prayers, take great risks, make great sacrifices, enjoy great moments, empower great people, and develop great habits. It's worthwhile reading. But one of the books that he suggested in here, Read Great Books, and I'm sorry, I probably heard of this years ago, but he mentioned this particular book, Good to Great. And this is by Jim Collins. Now, how many of you have ever heard of this book? Okay. This book has the heart of what I'm going to share with you today. This book, in my opinion, is so important that I gave my school board chairman an assignment to buy one of these and read it. I told him I'm not going to give it to him. He has to make the investment himself so he cares enough about this. Now look, let me tell you a little bit about this. You know, people can get great ideas and then they assemble and marshal facts to prove what they want to, the points they want to make, right? Not so this book. This book started out, this is a business book, and they started out with the Fortune 500 companies in this country. That means the top companies, business-wise. You don't become Fortune 500 because you're mediocre. You become part of the Fortune 500 because you're doing a great job in business. Okay. They took those Fortune 500 companies and put them through a grid, a pretty stringent grid, to screen out the best of the best. And they screened out, I think, about 1,400 companies. And then they put it through an even more stringent grid that raised the quality, the bar higher. And I think the next number was, I can't even say the number right now, something like 400? I should have that on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, but they still weren't satisfied. So they went up again. And they still weren't satisfied. They went up again. They finally got it down to 11 companies. And they says, okay, we're going to park here, and we're going to study what has made these companies so successful. And so they had to change their minds as a result of the things that they discovered, which to me makes it really valid. And these people have the documents in here. If you don't believe them, you can go check it out for yourself. Okay? I buy that kind of thing because it's not somebody's idea. They're not manipulating me, they're studying. Okay? Okay? After he wrote that book, it took 6 years, by the way, to do that, to put all that stuff together. After they're finished, they realized that they wrote a prequel to their first book, which is Built to Last. Now, a prequel means a book before. You know, their first project was, what about a company makes it successful, long-term, visionary companies? And so they discovered some things here, but when they discovered this, they realized that the books went like this, okay? And then this became the greatest business selling book ever that I understand. And I'm not in business, I guess that's why I didn't know about it. And evidently you're not in business because it didn't seem like any of you knew about it either. Okay, but many of the readers here were not business people. They were in the social sector. And guess what? We're in the social sector. The principles that are here are universal for all organizations, regardless of whether they're business or not. Is your school an organization? Mm-hmm. So it applies. And so since it was so directed to business, they decided afterwards that there are some things in this that does directly relate to business, and so he wrote another chapter, but it relates to the social sector. And instead of making people buy a new book and putting this chapter in here, he decided he's going to have a little separate book. But that wasn't it. Eventually, some of the companies that they talk about in here that become visionary went like this, down. And so what in the world is going on? So they wrote the third book, How the Mighty Fall. And I am forever different now as a result of reading these books. And I'm not sharing my ideas this morning. I'm going to share what they have to say. And I realize that I may be only talking to some of the right people. If you can get brave enough to assign your chairman that he ought to buy this book, tell him he needs to, very nicely and gently. Don't give it to him as a gift. Tell him he needs it. Tell him they said so over at FB. Okay. Now we'll get to your handouts here shortly. And I'm going to try to get through everything here, but I probably won't. But if you get these things and you read them, then it's much better you read these things in your quiet time at home where you can properly digest things. I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff at you today, and I know you're not going to be able to keep it all, and I know you're not school board members, okay, most of you. But some of the ideas do apply where you work in your classroom every day, and you'll notice as we go along. First thing we want to do is there any way to turn some of the lights off up front here, like that first switch? Okay, this subject, From Good to Great, is all about excellence. Question for you. Does God make anything that's not excellent? Does God make anything mediocre? Does God do anything poorly? No. It's not in his character. Well, are we supposed to be, okay, is Jesus Christ excellent? Mm-hmm. He's made in the image of God, right? He's express image of God. Now, what do we call ourselves? Don't we call ourselves disciples of Jesus Christ? If so, then we're very interested in excellence also, right? Mm-hmm. The only problem is we tend to settle for less. I'm speaking out of my own experience. I mean, we can dream and dream how wonderful this would be, but to try to translate that into reality is tough. At least I found it that way. Okay, so this class is meant to be an inspiration and a way to maybe get a hold of some things to really help move us up rather than down. You know, there's gravity in the world, right? Let's check. See if gravity's still existing. Sure enough, it's here. Okay? Okay. There's spiritual gravity also. Don't you find in yourself and in your school there's always a tendency to go down? That's always the way it is. And isn't that one of the reasons why you come to Teachers Week? Because you know that? And it's a way to go in reverse gravity, right? I think so. Okay, I'm not talking out of my hat here. Let's look at a few things that God has to say about excellence. Psalm 8. If you want something to meditate on, it's just wonderful about this subject. Read all of Psalm 8. But it says, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, and there's not a part of God's creation that's not excellent. We spend a whole year studying chemistry, and the more you study chemistry, you just go, wow, wow, wow. How in the world did God ever think that up? Well, the same thing is true of botany. The same thing is true of zoology. Same thing is true of mathematics. You know, I think God must have had an awful lot of fun when he was creating, putting all this stuff together. And he knows it because he made it that way. And we got to labor and think and try to follow God's thinking. And when you're learning how God thinks in algebra and you're in ninth grade, it's like, whoo, this is tough stuff. Just trying to follow God's thoughts. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. That's good. When we think like God thinks, we think excellent things. How excellent is thy name in all the earth, including algebra. Ah. Okay, Proverbs 8:6. And again, these are just little snippets. Here, the proverb writer says, for I will speak of excellent things. And in that particular case, that's wisdom speaking. Is there any such thing as mediocre wisdom? I don't think so. Proverbs 22:20, have not I written unto you excellent things of counsels and knowledge? Isaiah 60, verse 15, speaks of God's people being an eternal excellency. How excellent do you feel right now? But you know what? If you're one of God's children, he looks at you as if you are excellent, and he just delights to be with you. Isn't that humbling? Somehow he's able to look past our humanity and see reflections of himself in us, and that he just enjoys that. Okay. I know Darla's in here, so it's safe for me to talk to her. I know Darla's, and she knows me because she used to be one of my students. So, in a practical way, Darla's has her personal devotions. Darla's goes about her schoolwork. Darla's washes dishes. And Darla's is trying to become more like Christ. And Christ looks at Darla's and he sees all that. And he just enjoys company with Darla's. He enjoys that, Darla's. And you do too. I say, wow, these are good things. That same thing is true for every one of us. Daniel was described as a man having an excellent spirit, possessing excellent wisdom. You say, oh, well, we're not Daniel. You know what? We have a step up from Daniel. We got this chance to be in the New Testament with the better things. He was in the Old Testament. Okay, so now we switch to the New Testament. 1 Corinthians 13, the way of agape love is the more excellent way. And we could park there and talk about that for a while. Philippians 1:10, he says that you may approve the things that are excellent. I have a problem approving things that are mediocre sometimes. Referring to Jesus in Hebrews 8:3, Jesus obtained a more excellent ministry. And again, that's theology. We could park there for a while. And then Revelation describes Jesus Christ being an excellent bridegroom waiting for his excellent bride. Okay, that's some of what God has to say about excellence. I don't think there's too much question as to whether or not God cares about excellence. Now let's move into making some of these things practical. Just a bit ago, we noticed the gravity was still at work pulling this thing to the ground, right? Okay, we say gravity is a universal law or a universal principle. But do you know that the same gravity that pulls this little plastic piece to the ground is the same principle that keeps rockets and satellites orbiting the Earth, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not dreaming. It's gravity that keeps them there. along with their speed, you know, now how that's all perfectly balanced. Well, just like there are principles of accounting, principles of farming, principles of teaching, there are principles that guarantee organizational success. Principles that guarantee school success. We just need to be humble enough to, first of all, buy into them, and secondly, practice them. You know what our problems are? Oh, well, those are some great ideas. That's not me. This is the way I do things. I would like us not to be able to live with ourselves if we think that. I don't want us to be satisfied until we are thinking excellent ways and attempting to get a hold of some of these excellent principles and operate thereby. All right, your handout. Before we look at the handout itself, I would like you to carry away this thought. If you forget everything else that I say today, except that don't forget about telling your school board chairman to read that book. Okay, this is what I want you to remember. Good is the enemy of the great. And in our voting over here, we discovered we both experience good and we are in a place of good. And that's the enemy of the great. Some of you are blessed to be here and here. Well, that's great. I noticed that none of us were here or here. So that means we all have something to work with. Okay, now let's go to those handouts. Now, what I'm sharing on this page is the basic summary of what's in this book. It's applicable to any organization. I'll just run down through level 5 leadership, and I'm about ready to tell you what that means. Number 2, first who, then what. Number 3, confront the brutal facts, yet never lose faith. And that's called the hedgehog concept, but we'll get back to that. I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. That's not the hedgehog concept. Number 4 is the hedgehog concept. And I'll explain that. Number 5 is a culture of discipline. Number 6 is the technology accelerators, and that doesn't apply to your school very much. And that's one of the reasons why he wrote this other chapter right here. Number 7, the flywheel and the doom loop. And I know that that does not mean very much to you, but that's the basic ideas behind this book. Okay. Here's another way to organize that same information. In stage 1, which is referring to disciplined people, we have this level 5 leadership, and the first 2 then what? That's people. Number 2 is the disciplined thought concepts, where we confront the brutal facts. It's the Stockdale paradox, and we'll talk about that, and the hedgehog concept. Number 3 is the disciplined action, the culture of discipline, and the flywheel. Now, this stage 4 then goes to this other book, Built to Last. Listen right here. And it's the idea of clock building, not time telling, and preserving the core and stimulating progress. So we need to hasten on to talk about these things. Okay? So, first of all, the part about people. Okay, so how many of you here are school board members? Not a single person. So, okay, we can't even go there. So we're going to have to think about us in the classroom, okay? So we're going to fit, all of us as teachers are going to fit here someplace. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And what we just had up here, what is acceptable for good to great? It's only level 5. Now, I don't want to discourage you here, but I got to raise the bar. Okay? Let's just start at the very bottom here and look at these. I don't know how you look at yourself as a teacher. After Teacher's Week, maybe your feelings of competency are going down. I don't know, that's what usually happens at Teacher's Week. That's not all bad, because we have less confidence in ourselves and more confidence that God just steps in spite of us to do things. Did you hear what Gerald Miller's little story was this morning? He didn't know what to do to talk to those two boys with squirt guns, but he brought it to God and God told him what to do. Well, if you're in teaching any length of time, you get stories like that. Okay? Let's start out at the bottom. I'm saying we're all on here somewhere, probably. Highly capable individual. That's you, at least. Makes productive contributions through talent, knowledge, skills, and good work habits. Probably every single one of you. You would not be sitting here if that wouldn't be you. Okay? At least you. Okay, let's go something above that. A level one leader, then, contributes individual capabilities to the achievements of group objectives and works effectively with others in a group setting. You know, we don't like to think about this, but you and I are just bricks. If you go outside, this wall right here, is there one brick out there? There are many bricks. And sitting right here, there's a brick, 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 and so on. Do any one of us have enormous responsibilities? Are we just bricks? Well, we're just bricks. But guess what? You can be a worthy, solid, enduring brick, or you can be a crumbling brick. Did you ever see bricks, old bricks that are starting to rot away and crumble? Well, those are not good bricks. But we can at least be the best brick we can be. Okay? Level two. A competent manager organizes people and resources toward the effective and efficient pursuit of predetermined objectives. Now, there you might say, okay, I'm not even the principal. I can't even do anything. Well, I'll tell you what, you are working under a principal and you are working under a board, and so that's where you can put yourself. Number four, a level four leader catalyzes commitment to and vigorous pursuit of a clear and compelling vision, stimulating higher performance standards. Do you like to have principals that pull you up? Do you like board members who pull you up? Or do you like board members that say, oh, well, whatever? You know, if we're concerned about excellence, we like people to pull us up, don't we? Make us better bricks. Level five. This is what we're saying. For a good to great, you really need to have people like this in the leadership of your school, your school board chairman, your principal. A person who builds enduring greatness through a paradoxical blend of personal humility and professional will, and that means he's everything below that with this tacked on. Big order. But that's what it's going to take. If we're going to go from good to great, we need leaders like this. Okay? You may stop me anywhere along the line and talk about anything you don't understand or you want to discuss. Okay? Next, number two. See, we have this level five leadership. We're talking about disciplined people at this point. Now we're going to go to this one. First two. And then what? We tend to think that we ought to get somebody to teach school. Okay? And sometimes school boards are in a predicament of being at this time of year and they still don't have anybody. And they scratch around and they'll take anybody they can get. You know, you're asking for disaster. I think all of you have been hired a long time ago, okay? This is good, because the people who were hired a long time ago were chosen. They don't just ask anybody, they pick people. And this book says, you pick people by character first, and then you tell them what to do. Their character quality matters more than anything else. We tend to think, well, we ought to get teacher kind of people. Well, yeah, I can understand there's some of that. But I think we tend to go too far that way. Are there some communicators that aren't very good character people? Well, yeah, there are. Do they qualify as teachers? The answer is no. No. We want the best characters. In the language of this book, it says, get the right people on the bus. Just so, okay, here we got a bus. I check around, I want this person, and I want that person, and I want this person, and this person. And we get them on the bus, and we say, okay, now I want you to do this, and I want you to do that, and I want you to do this. Highest quality character first. And after that, you set a vision for where to drive the bus. Isn't that amazing? You just get the very best people before you assign your jobs or know exactly where you're going. That's amazing. We don't think that way. Those people, the highest quality characters, develop a roadmap as to where they're going to drive the bus then. And then they enlist a crew of highly capable helpers to make the vision happen. So if the right people are on, they got to decide where they're going, now they recruit high quality people to help them go there. Okay? Translating that to you, I'm going to assume now that you had some high quality people who got you on the bus. Okay? And they figured out where you're going, and so they enlisted you to help them go there. Isn't that a little bit humbling? Isn't that a little bit scary? Doesn't that make you feel kind of small? Yeah, but that's okay. Because, you know, when we got it all figured out, nice solid box, then God stays out and says, okay, well, if that's the way you want to do it, you're allowed to do it that way. But God wants us to feel helpless, and we depend on Him. He says, when I am weak, then I'm strong, right? Because God can step in and do His own work. Okay. Furthermore, this book says, when you hire people, there's practical discipline number one. When you're hiring people, when in doubt, don't hire. Just keep looking. Practical discipline number two, when you know you need to make a people change, act. Now, this is to your board. I'm not talking to your board. But if you realize somebody on the bus is not where they are most qualified to be, get them off as soon as possible. Because it's agony for everybody if the wrong person is on the bus. It's agony for the person who's struggling. It's agony for the person who's trying to tell them what to do. Just get them off. Aren't you glad you aren't the person to make people get off the bus? Okay, if somebody comes to us and says to us very gently, I think it's time for you to get off the bus. We can take that as a personal attack, or we can say, okay, and just understand, you know, maybe God wants me serving someplace else. Maybe this bus isn't where I'm supposed to be serving. So humbly get off. It might take a little bit of working through, but that's okay. Just step off and say, God, where next? Practical discipline number three, put your best people on your biggest opportunities. Now get that, on the biggest opportunities, not on your biggest problems. Now all of our schools have problems, right? But should we focus on problems or do we focus on opportunities? I know what my tendency is, to focus on the problems. After a while you think, oh, how in the world are we going to be able to go forward? I am so depressed with all the stuff that's wrong around here. Well, I'm in a bad position when I'm thinking like that. You know, I heard it here one other place. A problem is an opportunity, right? You don't focus on the negative of the thing. You say, now what is God giving us an opportunity to do here? And so we say, Lord, show me how to partner with you, just like Gerald Miller illustrated this morning. That was a wonderful solution to that problem. It was an opportunity. Those boys, they'd never operated squirt guns again. Look at that. Okay. Number three on your your handout. Confront the brutal facts, yet never lose the faith. Okay, now you probably have had some practical experience on this one. Do you like your principals to come in and tell you, Daryl, you're doing this, and Austin, you're doing that, and Rosella, you're doing this, and so on, as we solve our issues and so on? Or do you like him to come in and raise some questions and invite input? Which is your preference? How do you feel best? Talk to me, Serena.
Questions.
You like the questions. You're normal. Everybody else does too. Okay, so in case, I happen to be a principal, so I need to preach to myself on this one, okay? I might have it perfectly clear in my mind what I would like to do, but Serena will respond better if I lead her with questions and invite people's movement forward with me rather than tell them what to do. Okay, now listen. Now this is a big tall order, especially for you girls. I don't know what your principles are like. If they're not doing well in leading, you might just very gently and in the humblest, sweetest way you could muster, if there's a problem here, suggest that maybe it'd be more effective if you would ask us questions and help us to solve things together. And if your principal has any kind of character, he will bless you for that, because that's a good idea. If he's threatened by your suggestion, then he probably ought to be off the bus. But you can't make him get off. Okay, let's go on. B follows it. Engage in dialogue and debate and not coercion. Oh, I wish all of you could have seen what I saw last night. I was down in this boy's dorm, and I won't tell you what time it was, but they were playing a game in there, and it was time to go to bed, but I heard an awful lot of lively dialogue and debate going on in this room, in this dorm, so I decided I'm going to stick my head in here and see what's going on in here. And they were in a game, and they were debating. Woo, you should have heard it. Ooh, this is, and it was all gentle. It was all gentle and respectful and all that. But I tell you, it was dead serious. And they're kind, and that's productive. Now that was just a game. But if you could take that same thing, and translate it over into solving problems and giving and handling opportunities, good things can happen. You can't have fragile egos. I didn't see any of those boys withering. They're all men with their ideas. It was beautiful. Okay, see, if there is a problem, somebody got to figure out what the problem is, right? And whenever somebody dies and there's an autopsy performed, somebody gets a knife and cuts the cadaver open, right? And they look inside, they pull stuff out and look at it to find out what the problem is. And then finally they discover what the problem was. Okay, now when we solve problems, what's our first tendency as we do problem autopsies? What's our human tendency? You tell me.
Who screwed it up?
Who screwed it up? Who did this? That is faulty. Okay, if it was Chester that caused the problem, how does Chester feel? We already have enough insecurities. Every single one of us have insecurities sitting here, right? Okay, whenever Chester is blamed, then Chester feels even more insecure. And down I go. Okay, does an organization need anybody to go this way? No. Chester, if he caused the problem, there are proper and beautiful and gentle ways of helping Chester understand he's the problem, but it's okay. Here is an opportunity to go forward, Chester. Here's an opportunity for you to step up. The whole organization gains that way. And Chester feels good about it, even though he was the problem. Can you fault that? I don't think so. Letter D. Build red flag mechanisms that turn information into information that cannot be ignored. And you'll have to read the book to find out what all that means. I don't want to go into too much of that, except that, you know, and I'm human enough to know, if I see problems, red flags flying, part of me says, if I just let it go, it'll go away. Do you ever feel that way? Just hope the problems go away. Well, how many of your problems just go away? Not too many of mine do. And you might say, you're a wimp. But I get scared. Sometimes you gotta, okay. I'm a principal, I work with all females, okay? If there's a problem, I get scared of them. I'm serious, I do. I don't. Okay, I just gotta deal with myself. Just stay cool. We got to deal with this in a redemptive way, but deal with it. Sometimes how to deal with it is a good exercise. Learn how to deal with it. Got to keep going. E, Stockdale principle, paradox. This is a big one. There is so much of God's truth, it's like this. And for example, the whole world, we have male and female for reproduction. For electricity, we have positive and negative. And for electricity, for production, you have to have work and you have rest. If you have one of those, nothing happens. If you have the other, nothing happens. But if you have both, then something does happen, right? There are spiritual parallels to this. Okay, here's one of them. Retain faith that you can and will prevail in the end, regardless of the difficulties. Now get that. Do you get that? We have an issue, but we're going to overcome this issue. We're going to prevail. We're going to make it through. We may not feel like we're pressed down by the thing. But in our will to prevail, we also, at the same time, on the other side of the leg, confront the brutal facts of our current reality. Look, we got to deal with this. Whatever that might be, hard as it is. And if it's too hard, I got to get somebody to help me deal with this. We will prevail and we will deal with the facts, the brutal facts. It's huge. We could go bunny trails with this one for a while, but that is so essential. Okay. One of the things that these people discovered is that charisma, personal charisma, is not always good. We tend to think that the people with charisma are the ones who can lead the best. And they found out that's not true. So how many of you feel charismatic? Rosetta, are you the charismatic sight of purse sort of person? You know, that's the way I am, okay? I can't teach without doing this kind of stuff. Okay, it says on your sheet here, charisma may be as much of a liability as an asset because people do not feel free to approach you. They found that some of the very best leaders and CEOs of corporations are the people who go home and run a backhoe and wear work pants. Common, ordinary people. And if you ask them questions, they don't have to use big words. They'll talk if you make them. But they're not out there preaching how the world ought to change. They're just doing their job. They know what they're doing, and they do it quietly. And guess what? I think a lot of you are like that. And that's good. So if you're normal, you probably wish that you had more color in your personality. Forget it. If you got some color, okay. Use the color God gave you, but don't dream about being a charismatic teacher. Just go about doing what you need to do the very best you can. And it's probably better in the end. Every one of us got to discover our own identity and work out of that identity, who we are. We don't try to pretend to be anybody else. You go to Teacher's Week and you say, oh, yeah, I'd like to be just like that teacher. Wrong. I would love to see this man operate in his classroom, because I don't know him. But if he tries to act like anybody else that he admires, well, I have to tell him, son, bad idea. Just be you, whoever you are. You know why we don't like to be ourselves? We like to think that other people can do it a whole lot better than we can. We feel so insecure and inferior about ourselves. We want to be like other people. That's not true. God didn't make us like somebody else. God made us who we are. Okay, G, spending time trying to motivate people is a waste of time. Isn't that amazing? All you got to do is try not to demotivate people. You know, a great way to demotivate people is to get on people's cases. And you ever hear something called NAG? Yeah. That's a great way to demotivate people. I told you that I can't take papers like this. I mean, that is so sloppy, I can't stand to read it. You go back and do that again next day. I told you yesterday I wasn't going to take a paper like that. Now, is that student going to say, oh, yeah, my teacher's going to be on my case, so I'm going to start writing the best penmanship I can, best spelling I could possibly do. Is that the way that works? Wrong. If I had time, I'd love to read you a story about Becky. The story in Seven Laws of Learning about Becky, you remember that story? How about Becky handed in a paper that was crinkled up and ketchup on the corner, and the professor read that, and he said, I felt like putting an F minus on it. He said, I only put an F on it. But he put a little note, he said, Becky, I think you could do better. And she kept doing things until finally she handed in a paper, and on her paper, the professor wrote, Becky, I'm standing on my desk cheering. And that wasn't even the end of the story. Later on in life, some years later, he got a letter in the mail, and Becky was telling him that she was married and how her life was going. And she said, it is all because of you back there who believed in me. Motivating. Whoa. All of us are so full of insecurities. Here's this little girl, Mary Ann Everly. I don't know who she is. She's from
Oregon,
okay? If I'd have her in my class, I need to study that girl and believe in her and discover who she is and just bloom her and blossom her to be the best person that Mary Ann could possibly be. That's how you motivate people. Okay, we're never going to get finished, but I'll try. We're going on now to the second part of stage two, the disciplined thought, the hedgehog concept. Now, this is in relation to business, and I have another one here that relates to the social sector. But he says that this is where we need to operate out. When I read this book, I had to think about myself, and I invite you to think about yourself. What are you deeply passionate about? Well, for me, it's teaching. I've been a teacher for years. This is what I care. This is what I'm passionate about. What can you be the best in the world at? Well, you don't want me to fix your cars. You don't want me to build your mini barns. You don't want me to cook your supper, okay? What drives your economic engine? Well, in the social sector, you don't say economic engine because it's not about money. You say what drives your resource engine. And for me, I have books. Darla's has been to my house, and I have a library. That's what my resource engine is, okay? Okay, so the hedgehog concept is what is in the center. The intersection of all three of those is where we should be focusing our time, energies, and lives. It's called the hedgehog concept. And I don't know your personal stories. All I can do is tell you mine. And he says here in the social sector's passion, understanding what your organization stands for. Now, let's think about your school, not your person, no. What does your school stand for? What's its core values and why it exists, its core purpose? And for us, I'll just tell you, your core purpose and my core purpose is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever, right? That is the core purpose as to why we were created. Now, we are Anabaptist people, and we have four core values. And if you're a man of my Anabaptist history class, you've got to memorize this. We say it the first day in class, we say it every day in a course, and you can have it on the test. Is that right? Who had my class? Did you have my class, Austin? Your sister did.
I didn't.
Okay. I was recently teaching at a place in Ohio about some of this stuff, and there was a girl in the audience. This was several months later, and I said, I just threw out to her right in that. She didn't know anything about it before. I said, could you say those four? And bless her heart, she started quoting it. I thought, wow. The Holy Scripture is the ultimate authority. And this is Anabaptism cooked down to its nutshell. The basic essence of the Anabaptist vision is, number one, the Holy Scriptures are the ultimate authority. Since they are, I order my life and discipleship to Jesus Christ. When others do the same, I enter into a body relationship with them called the church. And the church operates with love and non-resistance as it cooperates with Christ to build the kingdom of God in the world today. And a thing that just distresses me to no end, there are people, young people, who come to Calvary Bible School and don't know that. They think Anabaptism is about beards and plain clothes. Okay, best that. Understanding what your organization can uniquely contribute to the people it touches better than any organization on the planet. I know we ought to park here and talk about some of these things, but I'm just introducing you to some ideas. Maybe you can think about these more at home. Resource engine, understanding what best drives your resource engine, broken into three parts, time, money, and brand. Okay, we're not going to talk about that, but part of your resource engine was coming to FB. Didn't you get some resources since you were here? I've been teaching a few years, and I got some resources. I was glad I was here. I just glow inside my heart when I go to bed at night. Just, wow, all the good stuff that's here. Resource upon resource. Yeah. I better be a better teacher next year, right? Because I got even more resources. Okay, let's hasten on. Let's go to the culture of discipline. A culture full of self-disciplined people. And we are blessed as Anabaptist people on this one. We have a head start. We are too good at this sometimes in our self-discipline. There's one thing we know how to do really well as Anabaptist people, and what is it? Tell me. What?
Work.
Yes, and what does work equal? Work equals
money.
We know how to work and make money. We're good at that. Now, can you make money by... not getting out in the morning? No. We know how to get up in the morning. Work hard. Go to bed early. Sleep fast so we can get up in the morning to work some more. We know how to do that pretty well. They're saying, if you're going to make this whole thing work, you need people like that. That's true. Now, this is not to be confused with a tyrant who disciplines. And we got some tyrants among us, I guess. But I know your dad a little bit. I doubt he's a tyrant that makes you, pulls you out of bed in the morning by your hair. Is that true?
Well, not my hair.
Okay. Well, if we got people jerking other people around, that's called dysfunctional, okay? But this culture of discipline is, it says here, a fanatical devotion to this hedgehog concept, right there in the center. Got to stay focused on this thing and don't move. And in a D, stop doing lists are more important than the to-do lists. If we're in error about anything, we got to stop doing that today, not tomorrow. Stop doing the wrong things so we can start doing the right things. Number six, the technology accelerators. This doesn't apply to us. so much because what technology do you use in your class? We shouldn't be using much technology. Maybe you can use a little bit to teach typing or something like that. But I know that we are stepping down if we have to have video algebra, for example. Some teacher on a video screen teaching algebra. That's a step down. That's not a step up. What's wrong? Why? That's one of the things we ought to stop doing as soon as possible, by the way. Why?
It's not an adaptive person to students.
What do you mean by that?
They can't meet the student's needs.
Why? And they're talking, they're explaining everything.
Right. From a long distance and probably a couple years before.
Yeah. Okay, can they step out of that picture and come around to a desk and help you? No. We need to have real live teachers in front of real live students. Okay? Okay, but that's kind of a technology fad right now. Do you know that? And some of our people are believing this, and they're doing this. We can harness carefully selected technologies, but we use technologies to accelerate momentum, not create it. And some of our people just are not thinking straight on this. And they think that we can use some of this technology and we're going to create momentum. We've got to stop that thinking. How an organization relates to technology is an indicator of good or great. Okay, now here's what we mean by this, the flywheel. Let's start right here. We're going to start over here on this corner. On this side, build strength. First two, and the idea of clock building that I haven't talked to you about. And if you have a big flywheel, some of these old engines, the hit and miss engines. You all know what those are? You boys know. Do you girls know what hit and miss engines are? They're those things that you got to. They big flywheels, and you start turning them faster and faster, and they after a while they start firing. You, boom, boom, bam, 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 boom. Okay, it's hit and miss. Okay, well you got to start that thing. And some of those things have huge high wheels. Yeah, it's hard to get them started. But you push it. And as you get it started, and you keep pushing, the longer you push, the faster this wheel moves. But you've got to keep going. And eventually, it picks up speed. And after a while, you get this thing working like this, and you got momentum. And good things can happen off of that. I'm ahead of myself, OK? We get this thing started. We have mission success. We have trend lines. We are demonstrating results. When we get a brand, for example, what's the name of your school?
Marrowbone Christian School.
Marrowbone Christian School gets a reputation in the community. It's a wonderful place to send children. They have good curriculum over there. They have quality teachers over there. Got board members who know what they're doing over there. It has a good reputation, and more people want to come in. You see? The flywheel's going like this. Success generates success, right? Okay. Eventually, it attracts more time, more believers with time and money to help the thing go. And it just keeps going and going. And you got to center it on this hedgehog concept. Okay? I should have shown you this one first, I suppose. We start. Accumulation and visible results. People line up, energized by the results. The flywheel builds momentum, steps forward with consistent with hedgehog concept. And you get this thing running, okay? Good to great transformations never happen in one fell swoop. Never. It takes a lot of push and pull. And now back to what I wanted to share with you. Did you notice that we have a line coming in like this, and at the hedgehog in the center, eventually it doesn't keep going this way, it goes like this. Okay, that's the shift to great. You gotta run this way for a while until you can break through. It takes a lot of time and effort to do that. Okay. Here's what happens if it's in reverse. Suppose there's no buildup. There's disappointing results. There's reaction without understanding. You know, you can go downhill too with a school instead of uphill. And there have been schools who went down and lost instead of going up. That's talk about reality. Okay, this is called the doom loop. Okay, the built to last has these ideas. This is extremely important. I just wish we could get this concept. Preserve core values and the core purpose. Remember I said our purpose is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever? And these core values are the four essentials of the Anabaptist vision. If you can keep those in the center, your hedgehog concept and the way you operate, you preserve those values at all costs. And at the very same time you change your culture and operating practices with specific goals and strategies, you do what it takes to adapt to whatever you're doing so that this thing can keep going like this. That is built to last. That's what it takes for long term. Okay, now, how the mighty fall, five stages of decline. Hubris, born of success. We got the flywheel running. We have a breakthrough. We go up, and everybody's excited. Things are on the upswing, and it generates more upswing, and we have an undisciplined pursuit of more. If we got something good, we're going to go for more good. And it shoots up like a skyrocket. Stage three, eventually, some problems show up. And this, we could talk about this for a while, what the problems are. One of those things are that for us, for teachers, teachers insist on plush offices. Teachers insist on perks, blah, 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 okay? That is an illustration that we got risk and peril. And you, if you deny the red flags, and here's where it's so hard, because people say, we have succeeded so well. It's just our success is never going to stop. We can't have problems. We have so much good under a belt, it's going to be forever. Red flag, red flags. But there have been people who've denied those red flags, and bam, they start to fall. And when they start to fall, they realize something's going on. We got to do something. And so they start jerking this way and jerking this way. We're going to try to remedy this thing fast. It's called grasping for salvation. And it doesn't usually work. And eventually, they go down to the bottom, they capitulate to their problems, or they become irrelevant and they die. Now, it doesn't have to be quite that bad, because here's the other final opportunity. You can have all this, and you can start to fall, and if you realize where you're falling, it takes somebody with an awful lot of humility and an awful lot of discipline to get in there and say, we've got to do what it takes, the hard stuff, to reverse this thing, and you can renew it and recover. So it's not perfect doom. Okay, I've said an awful lot, and you're not, and I haven't allowed you to talk, and I feel bad about that. Do you want to talk about anything before we dismiss? What are you going to tell your school board members? To read the book, to buy the book and read it. That's right. Yes. Yeah, you're allowed to read it too. Maybe you ought to, so you stay on this case. Okay. Anything else? Thank you for listening to me. Yes?
I just had a question about the levels. There are the five levels we talked about at the beginning. And I was just curious, so you were talking about how we can be, you know, more excellent. Are you thinking, it seemed like you're talking about leadership specifically, is every person on the team at that? In other words, I was trying to think through how you were describing
okay.
that. Are you talking specifically to people in positions of leadership, or saying that every single person functions at level five on the team?
Very good question. Thank you. It's specifically leadership. However, for you people, most of you are not leaders except in your classroom, right? And so you need to be the very best that you can be where you're called at whatever level you are. And so I was trying to make a hybrid here. But it's specifically to leaders. But most of you are not leaders, so I try to adapt it.
But we're probably leaders somewhere, some
yes.
other place, maybe
yes.
not on the faculty.
Yeah.
I understand what you were saying.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Have a great day.
Excused. For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.